Christine here with the Co-Living Code weekly show, where I interview experts and industry leaders in the co-living movement. And I am going to start doing something a little different, and that is I will be reading the bios for each of our guests first, because we also, on our podcast, a lot of people are driving, so they're unable to read the bios. And then on YouTube, I know sometimes you guys don't think to scroll down and see it in the description. So each guest, I will actually introduce them with their bio, and then me and Adam are going to launch right into it. So I'm very excited to bring him on. So Adam is a global entrepreneur, community leader, and avid backpacker with dynamic international experience in hospitality services and tourism. He graduated in 2011 from Arizona State University with a degree in international business management and entrepreneurship. And through his experiences living and studying in Argentina, Peru, and Mexico, he chose to focus on developing high-impact social businesses in Brazil and Latin America that provide long-term infrastructure, education, and entrepreneurial opportunity to developing economies and communities. And over the last 4 years, Adam has called Rio de Janeiro home, where he founded what is now ranked the 12th best bed and breakfast in Rio de Janeiro and the Rio Palazzo. In 2014, he launched the Favela Experience. We're going to go into what that favela means. I actually looked it up, and I had no idea what that word means. So we're really going to dive deep into that. The hostel, and which later then became Nova Era Co-Living, in which we'll have the link for the website also in bio. Nova Era seeks to cultivate one of a kind immersive cultural travel experiences for digital nomads, where they can thrive both their personal and professional journey. And presently, by way of the Favela Experience, a social impact tourism company and incubator and accelerator of impact entrepreneurship ecosystems. Adam's working really hard to weave these diverse interests, experiences, and skills together at the intersection of immersive learning and creative community building into a platform for social impact in Rio's favela communities. Favela is slum communities, which, you know what, Adam, let's just dive right into that if you want to explain. And again, I had no idea that's what the word meant. So that's the part of Brazil. So you're technically in one of their slum communities?
Correct. Yeah. So I live in a community. It's called Vidigal. And a favela, generally speaking, is an unregulated territory of land that has been occupied generally illegally over a long period of time, generally by Afro-Brazilian communities and Northeastern Brazilians who came to Rio looking for opportunity. And so now in Rio, you have one in three people actually living in these communities, which is about 3 million people. And in Brazil in total, if you were to bring together the total population of people living in favelas, it would actually be the ninth largest city in Brazil, a country of almost 200 million people. So it's a pretty significant piece of the country. And yeah, like you said, favela is essentially a word for slum. But of course, there's a lot more behind that than the word implies.
Nice. And then so what made you, you know, it sounds like that you have a passion for, you know, social entrepreneurship, global impact. So maybe dive into, is that when you were studying, you know, in Arizona, did you decide, okay, this is what I want to do. I want to help these communities.
No. So essentially what happened was my third year of college, I decided to study abroad and I went to Argentina and Peru and then backpacked through Bolivia and Chile afterwards. And I had such an incredible experience in Latin America. I just fell in love with its people and its beauty and its food and its culture. And so after I graduated school in entrepreneurship, I really wanted to look at ways that I could explore those opportunities further. So I started to analyze different countries throughout Latin America. And at the time, Brazil was the fifth largest growing economy in the world. It had the Olympics and the World Cup, you know, all these major mega events coming. And it seemed like a place of a lot of opportunity and had the kind of elements that I look for in a place to live. So I sold all of my stuff and packed up my bags and bought a one-way ticket to Rio after graduating from college. And from that point on, I kind of just started figuring it out, you know, learning Portuguese, understanding the business ecosystem. And over a very short period of time, you know, I was told by local people from Rio that there's only one true rule to living in Rio, and that's that you can't go to the favelas. You just stay away from there and you'll be fine. And so I didn't really necessarily understand why that was. And I wanted to figure out for myself if that was the reality. And so I walked into one of these communities and everything was different than what I expected. And I was received with such open arms and I met such amazing and beautiful people that, you know, kind of took me in and treated me as their own. And so I realized that favelas kind of had a marketing issue and that the media, you know, talking about violence and drug trafficking and all these other elements was really kind of focusing on the negative pieces, but there was so much more to it than that. And so I kind of made it my life passion to figure out how I could go about doing that.
No, and Adam, like, and I got chills when you were saying that. And when you said, when you got there, you're like, wait a minute, this isn't that bad. That's amazing. And, you know, you have had a lot of press. You know, obviously, I took a look at your website, you know, Huffington Post, like, you've had amazing stories and press done about your place, which congrats to you, right? So just trying to get the marketing problem, you know, showing people, like, wait a minute, it's not as bad as you guys think. So I love that. Did you originally start as a, like, a bed and breakfast, as a hostel? Have you, like, merged it more into a co-living home? Like, kind of maybe tell us about that evolution.
Sure. So essentially, when I first got to Brazil, you know, I was fresh off of a bunch of student debt, and I didn't have any money to create what I wanted to make. And so I had to figure out, how can I leverage my knowledge and my experience to create something? And so I created a partnership with a local Brazilian, had this beautiful home in the hills of the artist district in the Bohemian district that's called Santa Teresa. And we created a partnership to convert his home into a bed and breakfast. So we started with one room, and as we made a little money, we opened up a second one. And over time, we expanded that into 6 rooms. So I did that for about a 2.5-year period, in which we were very successful. You know, as you mentioned, we were able to reach number 12 on TripAdvisor in the city in a very short period of time, and we received people from all over the world. And so through that experience, I acquired a lot of knowledge about the Rio travel industry and what the kinds of things that people were looking for when they came to the city, and also what was missing from that equation. So shortly after establishing and kind of operationalizing and systemizing that organization, then I moved to the favela in a separate part of the city, and we developed a new space. So we found a nonprofit that had this incredible building, and they were going through all these challenges financially, and they didn't know how to take advantage of the space. And I said, well, listen, I have the experience and the knowledge, and let us create a space within your property, and we'll share a percentage of that revenue with you until we get to a fixed amount that's equivalent to your monthly necessities. And so we essentially started like that, kind of how we started the bed and breakfast, you know, super bootstrapping it, a lot of working off of kind of recycled materials and our own hard labor. And we started developing the space. And over time, we were able to reach about 10 rooms. So we're able to receive about 25 different people within our space. And since then, over the last 4 years, we've just been working on improving that process and improving the space as much as possible and receiving a lot of feedback. And, you know, over that period of time, we've received, you know, around 4,000 people from 40 different countries. So it's been a really dynamic, amazing experience and a lot of learning. And now, you know, I'm happy to say today, the money that we generate from those, from that co-living, sustains that nonprofit 100%.
Oh, I love hearing that. And then, so how many people can stay at one time?
Yeah, so the maximum occupancy would be 25. We have a mix, so it's kind of a hybrid hostel co-living type element. We have rooms that are shared rooms that, you know, fit 4 people, and we have private suites with you know, king size bed and ocean views and air conditioning as well. So we can kind of attend the different styles of travelers that come.
And they all, so it sounds like, and they all kind of get along, because that is 2 different demographics typically. But everybody, like, it works really well.
Yeah, it definitely works really well. I mean, you know, everybody seeks different things, but ultimately the reason that people come to stay with us are for the same reasons. You know, they're looking for a unique, deep, cultural, immersive experience. They want to be able to save some money. So, you know, they can stay here for a fourth of the cost it would be to live in the United States or Europe, and acquire a different language. And we connect them to a lot of local cultural projects that also generate impact in the community. So they can learn jiu-jitsu, they can learn samba, they can learn surfing, and that generates money for nonprofits as well. So that kind of guiding fabric of social impact and alternative living style and cultural immersion kind of brings everybody together.
I love hearing that. Okay, good. And then my next question was, what percentage, like where are most people coming from to stay there? Are they from the US, Europe, Asia? Like what's kind of the demographic?
Right. Well, so historically, the majority of our guests have actually come from Latin America. So Argentina, Chile, Brazil, I would say that makes up about 50% of the people that stay with us. We do have a decent amount of Americans that come here as well, though we'd love to receive a lot more. And a lot of Europeans as well, from France, UK, Germany. So it's very diverse in that sense. But it shifts with the years, depending on tourism demands and depending on what's happening with the economy, it tends to shift. But I would say it's more European and Latin American based than it is American.
Got it. And because you've been down there, you said already, 5 or 6 years?
6 years.
Okay, nice. Yeah, and you can tell how much you love it. Like you're very passionate about it, which is exciting to see. I love that. So what, as far as, because it sounds like, again, you have a hybrid of both, the co-living. So when did you really, because again, co-living is just a term that's picking up popularity recently. How recent did you guys start using the term?
Yeah, I would say it's been about 2 years. So initially when we started, it was much more hostel oriented. So a lot of the guests that we received stayed for, 1 to 3 days. They were looking for a budget option, a place where they could save a little bit of money. And after the Olympics, the tourism demand in the city basically evaporated. And we found ourselves in a situation where we had to reconstruct our identity. And so when I looked around the world at some of the different companies and organizations that were kind of leading in terms of creativity and how we utilize space, I discovered co-living. And so I said, I think this is an area that we can really thrive in, and we can offer something that's really different, really dynamic, and can attract, digital nomads to come here and have a unique experience. And so we started shifting our marketing approach. We started creating different rules and systems internally that would facilitate people to stay here on a longer term basis. So now, the average person stays, I would say, around 3 months, but we have people that have stayed here a year. We have some people have been here for 4 years. So it really changes, but yeah, it's definitely been an evolutionary process.
And do you guys have a minimum for stays, like minimum night?
No, we don't have a minimum. One night would be the minimum. If we have the space available and somebody wants to just drop in and check out what we're doing, and then we'd love to have them. Ultimately, we really enjoy when people come to stay for a longer period of time. I think it adds a lot more value to the collective experience when people can spend every day together, really get to know each other, and move in with the ups and downs of life in a collective space. I think that's where the essence of co-living is. But we're not against receiving people for short-term stays as well.
And then what's your favorite part about running your location there?
Well, I would say there's two pieces. One is, when you run an international co-living space like we have and you live there, I also live here as well. It's like traveling the world without going anywhere, right? So, we're receiving people all the time from so many different places. It's very common that, around our breakfast table, you have people speaking 5, 7 different languages. So that dynamic experience and just learning about different cultures and different history and languages is super enriching. I'd say the second element is connecting those people to the locals in the community. So as someone who lives here on a full-time basis and really knows the people from the favela, it's amazing to see how people who don't speak the same language or have very little in common can connect in such beautiful ways. And so, giving people those immersive, incredible experiences that also generate positive impact for the local community is amazing.
And do you guys have organized, local, where you go out and impact the local community in a positive way? Do you guys host any organized events to do that?
Kind of. So The first option is either you can just participate in some kind of class or experience. So let's say you want to take Afro-Brazilian capoeira classes. You can do that at a nonprofit project that's a partner of ours that works with children. And so by going to those classes and paying for those classes, you're helping support that project and you're meeting the kids from the community. And so it's mutually beneficial. The second possibility is we do sometimes do work exchanges, or people can also just volunteer with our organization or with some of our partner organizations. So one of the benefits of the fact that we also have a nonprofit, we also have our own social business, is that we have a lot of needs. And you know, we have an incubator, we have an accelerator of entrepreneurs in the community. And so digital nomads in general have a lot of really unique experience that they can add value to what we're doing, and we can create, you know, mutually beneficial kind of agreements based on that.
That is really cool. No, that's awesome. I love that you guys are doing that. And your earlier point about, you know, you get to travel. I've never heard it put that way, but you're exactly right. It's like you get to travel the world without going anywhere. Because if people come in and you learn so much about their culture and, you know, the types of foods they like to eat, you know, it's just the same thing even here in LA. You know, it's really fun. We get excited when we have somebody here from a different country that we haven't had yet. Just asking a million questions.
It's the best.
For sure. So the main language there is Portuguese. Do they speak Spanish, a lot of Spanish? Like, what are the other languages that are the most common in that area?
Yeah, so people in general do not speak Spanish, nor English. Okay. Now, Portuguese being a Latin language, grammatically has a lot of similarities to Spanish. So people who do speak Spanish definitely have a leg up, and it's much easier for them to learn Portuguese and to interact with locals. So most of them can understand a sufficient amount of Spanish to be able to interact with people. English is a little bit more challenging, but the thing that's really cool about Brazilian people, and especially Brazilians from the favela, is that they're really open, warm people. And so even if they can't speak your language, they interact with you, they engage you, they take you places, and they really kind of force you to be their friends. And so even though the language can be a barrier, that is an element, sometimes it's challenging for people, I think that also adds a lot of unique experience to it. That, you know, it takes people outside of their comfort zone, and they can't just show up and speak their language and hang out. They actually have to try hard and work to create connection. And so I think that adds an additional element that's amazing.
Awesome. So my last question that I ask everybody, Adam, is where do you see the just this really amazing revolution of co-living going in the future?
Yeah, you know, I think co-living is going to start taking a direction of looking at more of the social dynamics and kind of the intentionality of community creation. So, you know, it's great that people come to a space and live together and share spaces and are able to kind of streamline the process of, you know, creating community and living somewhere together. But I think that there's so much potential in that, and the different knowledge and experience that those people bring. And I think the power of that, when you can figure out unique ways to connect those people both internally, but also with their external environment, is massive. And so I think, you know, over time, we're going to start seeing co-living organizations thinking about, you know, how can we integrate in our local communities? How can we facilitate people not to just come stay here, live here, but to come here and thrive and to come here and be successful and to add value to the neighborhoods and communities around them? So, you know, that's where I'd like to see things go. And you know, what we're trying to do is be a leader for a model that can eventually be replicated for other places. So I think one of the things that's really missing from the co-living industry, specifically in the United States and more developed countries, is the inclusivity factor. So, you know, unfortunately, people who don't have as much financial resources or maybe grew up in a poorer neighborhood, they're less likely to have the opportunity to be a part of a co-living space. And I think that's not fair. And I also think that there's a lot of value added by bringing together people of different, you know, economic standards and education into the same space. And so what we're trying to do here in the future is expand to have more rooms and be able to basically leverage the people that are able to pay more so that people that can pay less can also be a part of that. And so what we're trying to raise money for right now is to create a new space, a bigger space, where people from the favela can live in this co-living space, optimize their quality of life, and co-live with other people from around the world at a value that they can actually afford. So without displacing people, without, you know, facilitating gentrification, but facilitating community development. So, you know, I don't know if the co-living industry is quite there and ready for that, because that's not always the most profitable path. And so there has to be investors who are willing to make a sacrifice on their profit margins so that there's an increase in the social impact. And, you know, we're hoping to be one of the first kind of leaders in that, and hopefully that can serve as a model for others.
I love that. And just, you know, just the other night, I was at an event here in Los Angeles, and PodShare, which is based out here, Alvina was one of the guest speakers for the night just by chance. And I was so excited I was there, because that was a surprise. But she had told a story where there was somebody, you know, a homeless gentleman that actually was able to stay at PodShare amongst everybody else. They didn't know he was necessarily homeless, but he actually integrated really, really well. He was so grateful for the opportunity. It changed his life. And it's like, how are we able to do that in a way that, you know, doesn't affect anybody? It actually uplifts everybody. So I'm excited to see you take that on, and let me know if I could support you in any way. That's amazing to hear that. I love that. So it's a perfect point to end on. Actually, I have one more question. Software. So, you know, we're developing software because we've packed together so many things. How do you guys do your bookings? What software applications are you guys currently using to communicate, booking, that kind of stuff?
Yeah. So right now we don't have internally really any specific software that we use to manage it. We use Slack channels for internal communication and general spreadsheets for financial management. You know, we have weekly meetings where we discuss things, and there's, you know, different people who are responsible for overseeing cleaning and making sure everybody's doing their fair share. We don't have cleaning services that are contracted out. So everybody has to contribute in order to maintain the space. So we have kind of our internal systems that we use to facilitate that, but there's no real software that we're using to base that on. In terms of bookings, in the past we used a software called CloudBeds. So that was actually a software made primarily for hostels, but it was an easy way to just be able to take bookings online and you know, update all of the different portals as well, like booking.com, Airbnb, etc. So we found that to be the best tool out there thus far, but you know, we've been looking into some different co-living softwares as well, and I look forward to learning more about what you're creating and also looking at how we can integrate that with the co-working software, because we do have a co-working space here as well. And in the future version of what we'd like to develop, we plan on having a significant amount of co-working space. So that's where we're at right now.
Well, Adam, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. This is an awesome, awesome interview. I know now I'm trying to make my travel plans for 2019. I'm like, okay, Brazil needs to be on the list. So, and if you're ever in Southern California, definitely let me know. And
for sure.
Thank you again.
Yeah, thank you as well. It's a pleasure to connect and come visit.
For sure. Okay.
All right.